Hello everybody, this is William Del Pilar, and this is the Red, White, and Rude, episode 47, as we claw our way to episode 50. For those of you who have not watched this podcast, I thank you for tuning in. I do this podcast because, as the great Andrew Breitbart once said, politics is downstream of culture. You know, early on, I was like, what's that mean? What's he want? And then like, And what he's saying, my friends, is that whatever's happening culturally, whether it's entertainment, movies, music, sports, etc., it flows downstream where politics is at. And eventually, its way of life affects politics. And that's why I wanted to do this podcast, is because there's a lot happening out there, whether it's movies, which we're going to talk about, celebrities, which we're going to talk about, video games, which we're going to talk about, television and streaming, which we're going to talk about. It does affect us politically. We have a great show for you tonight. We're going to hit some movies. We're going to talk about celebrities. Sydney Sweeney, she's been signed to do 2 video games / anime. You know, it's one anime turned into a video game. Sydney Sweeney is the hot thing right now. And when I say hot, I'm not talking about how she looks physically. What I'm referring to is how much in demand she is in right now. So we're also going to talk about Meghan Markle, Megyn Kelly versus George Clooney, Ubisoft. they don't know how to go away. I can't remember the movie Wedding Banquet or something like that. We're going to talk about the LGBTQ, XYZ, again. Disney, they still don't get it. These fools over there still don't get it. With Malcolm in the Middle and the reboot, some terrible news coming out of that. And so many other stories. Before we get going, though, let me remind you, for those who are regular listeners, and if you're new, make sure you bookmark grumblingsmedia.com, grumblingsmedia.com. You can also follow us, and odds are you are listening to us on one of these platforms, but you can follow us under the handle Grumblings Media. The handle is Grumblings Media at YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify, ePandora. I actually recommend YouTube or Rumble for the simple fact, look at this beautiful mug. How can you not want to watch it every week? And with that, my friends, let's get going. Let's start off with celebrities first. We're going to hit Ms. Meghan Markle, accused of plagiarizing British author's book for her canceled Netflix series, Pearl. You know, let me give kudos to Daily Mail. I will never give them a dime. They're always begging for money. You know, we can't live without you some more. You know, be a little bit more unbiased, Daily Mail, and maybe you will get a couple of dollars from me. But I will say this, they're on top of the news cycles all the time, and they are one of my sources for news. I discovered them actually through the great one, Rush Limbaugh, his voice on loan from God, and God called the big man back. Rest in peace, Rush, you are sorely missed. All right, let's talk about this Meghan Markle. So this past November, British author Mel Elliott, she accused Meghan of plagiarizing her Pearl Power children's book series for Markle's canceled Netflix animated series, Pearl. And this was came about through an interview with the paper, The Sun, an English paper. And the allegations target the Duchess of Sussex media venture. And obviously, we're talking intellectual property here. Now, Ms. Elliott, or Mel Elliott, she's from, I assume it's a she, always Mel Elliott, from Derby, claims her, she is, my notes, her Pearl Power series, which was first published in 2014, inspired Meghan's Pearl. Now, Pearl's Power follows a young girl, obviously the name of Pearl, who tackles challenges with resilience and kindness. And that's actually, I say it mocking me, but seriously, no, that's good. Kids need to learn how to be resilient. They need, and most importantly, they need to be shown how to be kind to one another in an era when you're behind a computer and bullyism is off the charts compared to any time in history. So Meghan Markle then came and announced Pearl in July 2021. It's an animated series about a 12-year-old girl inspired by historical female figures. And it was being produced by her flagship Archwell Productions. Now, that said, I am sure part of it was going to be how to be resilient and kind. But that's a theme that underlies most children's books. So the problem is this. Elliot sent copies of her books to Megan via Kensington Palace in 2018. That's when Markle and Prince Harry were still senior royals. So, and then additional copies were then sent in 2019 to the couple's former patronages to gain their support, people close to them. Elliot alleges that Meghan's Pearl mirrors her book themes of obviously the young girl named Pearl. I mean, it's rather in the title, Pearl. Pearl is not a common girl's name. Let's just be clear about that. I gotta be honest. In my whole lifetime, I've never met a girl named Pearl outside of probably in a movie or TV show. I'm sure they're out there, but what are the odds? That's flag number one. No plot details of the Netflix series were released, and it was canceled. They canceled in May 2022 during budget cuts, and nothing was ever produced. Now, ironically, Elliot sent in 2022 a legal letter to Netflix about the similarities, and they went unanswered. I guarantee you, they were calling Megan. That is a lie. Then they just read the book. They saw her idea. Things that make you go. So Archwell Productions also ignored Elliot's outreach. And this is what led to the public accusations. And she's saying, I'm not saying Megan copied my book word for word, but the similarities are striking. Let me translate that for you. I'm not saying Meghan Markle copied my book, but she copied my book. See, Elliot's books are self-published, and they only sold about 10,000 copies. And that's actually pretty good, I think, for self-publishing in a genre that, I mean, you can't help but trip over children's books, you know. And then you have to avoid the mountains of LGBTQ books for children on how to give fellatio, you know, how to achieve an orgasm at the age of 8, how to come out as transgender and not tell your parents. All those books are out there for children, too. I find it ironic. When you go to a school board meeting and you start reading the book, and John, you go to your knees and stop. Oh, kids read this. No, it's too graphic for us adults. You know, if it's too graphic to be read at a school board, it's probably too graphic for a child to read. Do you think Democrats have that logic? No, they're on a mission. Indoctrinate and transition. Anyway, back to Elliot stated, quote, I'm not saying Megan copied my book word for word, but the similarities are striking, unquote. Again, 10,000 copies means limited exposure. But here's the kicker. She sent the books to the Princess of Dutch, the Duchess of Sussex. I'm not a big fan of royal families. Off with all their heads is my take. They're nothing but leeches. Anyway, she was mocked for this. Marco was. One user writing, quote, Megan stealing kids' book ideas now? Unquote. Now, some question pro, my take is you're an idiot. She sent the book to Megan. However, it's tough to prove plagiarism because it requires proving substantial similarity and access. And her support or her evidence is the fact she said the book's there. But there's no proof of her having actually read them. I think the proof is in what she pitched Netflix. And since they canceled it, I would not be shocked. I don't know if part of that cancellation was, man, she's giving us crap. Do we need this crap? Or her best idea could be a stolen idea. And the reason I bring this up, it resurfaced in a recent article I came across. And I just can't get enough of Meghan Markle in terms of the National Enquirer stories, because they're now the National Enquirer stories about her tend to be like they were from that Democrat, John Edwards, who they busted the story of him and his mistress. That's National Enquirer. It turned out to be true. I'm not a Meghan Markle fan. She's a DEI victim. And not that she's DEI, that's her whole world is about that, you know? And her show, oh my God, who sits here and works in the kitchen all in white? So obviously this accusation does scrutinize all of her media projects, which are not many to be proud of. And it raises questions about her own creativity. And on a serious side, we're talking intellectual property. So I would not be shocked if all of that was whack because of the potential liability here. And her ideas just aren't that great. Megyn Kelly responds to George Clooney's criticism of her journalism credentials. Okay, so Megyn Kelly is gone. She goes after anybody who she disagrees with, who tries to shine a light on whatever crap they're trying to shove down our throats. George Clooney's another one. He's on some kind of kick thinking he was an actual journalist. You know, he's chastising people. Really, George? Really? Get off your knees for a moment, George. And remember, you were stating, Biden, that man's as sharp as a tack. After that debate, that man's as sharp as a tack. Phone numbers, Democrat Party starting to give him the boot. Joe Biden needs to go. He just does as he's told. Anyway, Megyn Kelly, which is a show I watch, I would encourage you to watch as well. She's my bottom line top podcaster right now. Of course, I've become a big fan of All In podcast too, but she introduced me to the All In, not her herself, but watching her show. Anyway, so she responded to George Clooney's claim that she is not a journalist. Oh, she's a journalist. And they don't have a feud. She just cracked on him, and he's had enough and tried to crack back. So in a Variety Actors on Actors interview with Patti LuPone, another sow, she questioned Kelly's journalistic work, saying, I'm not quite sure what she's done to be a journalist. Well, maybe if you looked at her resume, her career, you'd sit there and find out. So he claimed to have been shot. But here's the kicker that caught my attention. Clooney has claimed to have been shot at in conflict zones like Darfur, Sudan, and the Congo. And that he implied that gave him journalistic credibility because she's never been shot at. But the way he said it, damn, Clooney's been in a war zone. He's been in the Congo. Strap it on. Enemy. Got to take cover. Got bullets with it. That's how he kind of implied it. His body language, his tone, how he said it. That's what's your first thing that comes to your mind. So, Megan looked it up, and she called him out. Clooney was held at gunpoint by a 10 to 13-year-old child soldier in Darfur in 2007. No shots or fire. Scary moment? Yes. Yes. But he exaggerated the incident. They imply the war zone, the danger, that I walk into the valley of evil. I mean, that's what he was implying. On the flip side, Kelly stated she was a journalist. She gave her journalist creds, 20 years at Fox News, NBC, a lawyer, you know. And again, I already talked about it. She criticized Clooney's 2024 New York Times op-ed piece urging Joe Biden to exit the 2024 race. Cowardly. Everybody knew Biden was a walking, dead man walking. And she called him out, rightfully so. He's not a journalist. He doesn't know what journalism represents. Hell, he couldn't even crack on her property. She's a bona fide journalist. Look up her resume. You'll see. Anyway, right now George Clooney is playing Edward R. Murrow. Oh, the irony. You know, playing somebody with a reputation of Murrow. But let me say this. The reason both these stories, backtracking to Meghan Markle here for a moment. Markle pushes DEI. She pushes victimhood. She pushes a race car. This is a woman who's a freaking princess now, unofficially now, or been taken away from her. But that was her and the redheaded son, Harry's doing. But she's victim. That woman's not a victim. That woman had a great acting career. Even her family has called her out victim. What's she talking about? She grew up oppressed. Oh, that wasn't the Meghan Markle I grew up with. You know, so they lie and create these facades to sit there and play themselves as the victim. So you'll sit there and go, oh, all she's doing is creating greater tribalism, greater hate amongst whites and blacks. And she knows it. But she doesn't care as long as she can gain from it. And that's the problem with Meghan Markle. As far as George Clooney, his wife has ties to a Middle Eastern terrorist group. I forget which one. He is a very powerful man in Hollywood, or influential man. Let me say influential man. And his star is dimming, not because he's a bad actor or anything like that. It's just he's old. They want the young studs, you know. And his defense, he can pick and choose. He's probably retiring. Semi-retirement, probably has kids, has wife, you know. So, but he wants to play a journalist. And then he actually thinks he's one. And he wants to demonize everything Trump, everything conservative. You know, this man, Rosemary Clooney, he slept on her couch for a long time till he got his break. And God bless him for that. But Rosemary Clooney may not have been a wealthy woman, but she was well off and had all the contacts in Hollywood. So, hell, it's not like he even worked for it. You know, he had like 8 or 9 pilots and kept giving more and more shots because of his name and Rosemary. You know, so this guy, you know, he wants to be portrayed and wants to be seen as something he's not. Be who you are. You could be a great role model that way. Be why, look, I never gave up. Sure, I got 8 chances, but I finally broke it big in ER. Then I abandoned them like the losers they were. I'm kidding. He didn't do that. He actually came to ER, so God bless him for that. And he's made enjoyable movies, but he's out of his depth. He's a rocket scientist. He is not when it comes to politics. So he supports policies that keep him rich, that keep him in the circles he runs around in, rich, but not the working class. I spit on Clooney and the rest of his ilk. All right. He does say, I don't care what they say. So if he doesn't care what people say, then why are you responding to everything? So Megyn Kelly's fiery response to Clooney highlights the deep media Hollywood tensions over journalistic credibility. Actors who act think they are that role in real life. I stayed at a Holiday Inn. I'm an actor. All right, moving on. Pedro Pascal. He is a duck removing the D and putting a C. Caused J.K. Rowling the heinous loser over U.K. trans ruling. So, they talked to us about the rule of law. Looks like Pascal here, the idiot, the moron, the loser, doesn't want to believe what the law says. The U.K. Supreme Court said a man and a woman are determined by what they are at birth. Period. End of story. Pedro doesn't like that because he's got a trans brother. Well, I guess a trans woman. I don't know. I get him screwed up. He has a brother who dresses as a woman, for lack of a better word, to say it. And why do I say that? Well, I researched to see if his brother transitioned. Well, it's private. Yet his brother was in an interview. Wasn't so private there. You know, they choose what they want to be private when they want it to be private to deflect. You know, to me, if you are truly transgender, you truly believe all this, it's like how you were born, then snip, snip. Then I will believe you are in the cause. Until then, you're just a cross-dresser. Why? Because they're trying to indoctrinate and transition kids who, when pulled out of that environment, quickly realize, oh, I'm a boy or I'm a girl. I love telling this tale. Parents with 2 kids, one a girl, one a boy. The younger boy goes, I want to be a girl. Well, instead of snipping his schlong off and giving him estrogen, they sat him down and talked to him. Turns out he wanted to be a girl because he thought his sister was getting more attention. So let's get back to Pascal and the transgender issue here. He called J.K. Rowling a heinous loser in a Variety interview because she responded positively to the U.K. Supreme Court ruling on transgender issues. Now, Pascal is a big advocate for transgender rights. Why? Because he's got a transgender brother, Lou Pascal. I don't know what Lou's name. It's Lux Pascal. But he also has ties to the Gina Carano lawsuit against Disney. And not because he wants to help her. It's because he is the prime example of the hypocrisy that's going to end up causing Disney to settle out. I know that scares the hell out of him. He may not admit it. Yeah, got a hair here. So the UK Supreme Court, for those of you not aware, ruled and upheld transgender protections, but they did sit there and state a man is a man because they're born that way and a woman is a woman because they're born that way. So they didn't get the full ruling like they wanted. Now, she criticized the ruling because it undermined women's rights. I think my notes may be wrong here. My producer may have got him wrong, so let me double check that. So I was right. It's, you know, it upheld the fact that you can't discriminate against transgender, et cetera, as it should. But what it did state is that men born as men, women born as women, is a man and a girl. And that's what she was celebrating. So she celebrated that, and then she did, you know, sit there and say, hey, they are undermining women still. So Pascal, who's, a vocal transgender advocate because his brother is a cross-dresser and claims to be transgender, accused Rowling of spreading harmful views via her platform. So Pascal's brother, who he calls his sister now, Lux Pascal is her name, came out as a transgender woman in February 2021. And he's called her, quote, one of the deepest, most powerful people I know, unquote. It's like somebody who's slightly different. The most powerful person I know. I hate it when people do that. When they come up to me, too. Thank you for serving, William. I'm like, stop. There's people who actually have suffered, have gone to deep war, come back traumatized. They're the ones who you need to be thanking, not me. To me, it was a beer in hand and a woman in the other. Yeah, but back to Pascal, you know, so he's on his knees for the transgender cause. Now he's also set to play Reed Richards in the Fantastic Four. And he can't help but keep throwing that crap in people's face. Disney doesn't learn. That's a topic here for another moment. But regarding Pascal and Gina Carano, that's based on The Mandalorian. He told her post-trans rights hashtag to quell backlash over her boop bop beat pronoun bio and that mock transgender, which is her right. Carano said, no, I don't do that. And God bless her for that. It's her First Amendment speech. And it's a very popular, and it does go with Disney's values. They fired her. But they don't fire Pascal for saying go with transgender. She's got a termination lawsuit going. The courts just ruled you can move forward with that. Disney, you need to give them the information they're asking for. Pascal, you will come on the stand. He's a potential witness. Her point is, why didn't you discipline him? Trans. That is Pascal's take. Did they fire him for being political? No. And he's compared Trump to Nazis. Her firing was for her conservative views. Disney's going to pay the price on this one. Again, a federal judge, April 3rd, just this past month, said that Carano can access Pascal's salary information for the lawsuit as well. Disparity of pay, a little bit more discrimination there. Look, until the past year, Pascal has not been a big star. People can say he's a big star now, but most people still don't know him. Why? We live in a fragmented society. You know, as Oliver Stone said, Gladiator 2 was empty carbs. A lot of people want to see it, but it's forgotten. There's nothing memorable about it. And that's true. You know, he's been in a lot, and I start to recognize his face, but I'm like, yeah, I avoid his movies now. If he's in a movie, I will avoid it. So rallying, getting back to rallying. So in 2020, she had an essay defending her biological sex views, and that's what kind of got all this backlash going. And she's faced transphobia accusations, but she defends her stance, and I agree with her. Men dressing as women, men claiming to be women, should not be allowed in women's bathrooms, in rape centers, in locker rooms. Yeah, they are. There's a disease, I forget the name of it, where there are men who love the cross-dress because they get off on it. Let me find that for you. It's in a different set of notes. I knew I had it here. It's autogynephilia. And that's been coined by somebody in the psychologist world. And it's a phenomenon where a biological male, i.e. Lux, whatever his name is. What's his name here? What's your name, Luxie boy? Luxie Pascal, I guess. Who's a biological male, experiences sexual arousal. I mean, I'm not saying he does, but it's a good chance he's one of those. Experiences sexual arousal from the thought or act of being a woman. Often through cross-dressing, imagining themselves with female anatomy, or engaging in stereotypically feminine behaviors. It is considered a type of paraphilia, atypical sexual interest, and is often linked to transvestic fetishism or transvestic disorder. So, this suggests that autogynephilia is a motivator for some transgender women to transition distinct from homosexual, transsexuals, trans women, attracted. So, it's a controversial theory here, as many transgender individuals and researchers argue, it pathologizes gender identity, oversimplifies the motivation for transitioning. Maybe not. we'll never know. But the point is Lux has affected his brother to hate. So Lux has taught his brother how to hate. So back to rallying. So she's faced this type of hate that Pascal pushes and promotes. I mean, I don't know, but I wouldn't be shocked if there's underlying violence in those posts that he's done with hate. So Pedro Pascal's criticism of J.K. Rowling and his role in Gina Carano's Disney lawsuit, this amplifies tensions over transgender issues versus free speech. He doesn't want you to have free speech, but he wants him and all his cronies to have free speech. I just don't care for him. Let's talk some anime. Ghost in the Shell director Mamoru Oshii critiques rise of political correctness in not only the Ghost in the Shell movie and anime, as well as general anime. So, in an interview with IGN Japan, he's the director of Ghost in the Shell. Oshii criticizes the rise of political correctness, and he argues that it stifles creative freedom, not only in anime, but the Hollywood adaptation. So his remarks focus on his 1995 anime and the legacy, meaning the movies and all the shows that have come since. He says, quote, it creates a, quote, restrictive environment, unquote, for creators, citing Hollywood's influence on anime. So for those of you not aware, Ghost in the Shell, it's a 1995 film. It's based off of a manga by Masamune Shirow, very popular. And it explores identity and technology in a futuristic Japan. And it's praised for its philosophical depth. It's very deep. It explores government control. The masses not thinking for themselves, stuff, indoctrination, stuff like that. So Oshii, the director of the movie, argued that modern creators face the pressure to avoid these types of controversial themes. You think? Government doesn't want you thinking, is government controlling me? Ooh, Ian Carroll, where are you? Ooh. I'm not a big Ian Carroll fan. A couple of his takes, I'm like, okay. Oh, what's that other take? No, Bigfoot's not my daddy. So modern creators are told to avoid controversial themes instead of having unrestrained creative freedom that we used to have in the 80s, 90s. Now we can't have that. So he did talk about his 2017 live action Ghost in the Shell film, and that was with Scarlett Johansson, and that they were accused of whitewashing. You know, that's funny. Cleopatra, Black America, was like, what's the big deal? Cleopatra was not black. That's what the big deal is. And it's not a big deal. You make it a big deal because you scream cultural appropriation. Not just Black Americans. Asians, as we saw here, whitewashing. Latinos do it too. But, hey, you know, what's the big deal when it's an Asian playing a white person? Black playing a white person? A Latino playing a white person? You know, I'm waiting for Ryan Gosling to be cast as the Black Panther. Oh, man. But anyway, he said that whitewashing accusations for casting her as Major Motoko Kusanagi is one of the reasons the movie did not do well. He dismissed the casting controversy, stating that the character's cybernetic body transcends race, and criticized the backlash as an example of political correctness. He's old school, so he calls it political correctness. Blacks created the term cultural appropriation. Now there's DEI. Then before that, it was affirmative action. All this is all negatives, forcing people to hire and put into place people who may or may not be qualified. But once the question arises, did that person get the job because of this, or this? So they got angry at that, and they came up with whitewashing. And I'll be honest, there is some truth to it. And I would not have caused – I thought Scarlett Johansson was a terrible cast. I just didn't like her cast there in that role. I would have gone with one of these feisty, athletic Japanese or Asian women, and they're out there. So, and it's not because they're Asian that I demanded. I'm like, hey, you know, if Scarlett Johansson had played the role well, she would have won me over, but she didn't. But I get his point, you know. Yeah, his point is also that Hollywood, they play it safe. Safe storytelling, color by numbers, to avoid backlash. And they dilute the original Ghost in the Shell's provocative themes. And they are provocative. So the 2017 film grossed $170, but it cost $110 million. So it needed to gross about $330 million to break even. So obviously underperform. You know, if people got to realize too, these are niche markets. Ghost in the Shell is a heavy anime because of its heavy undertones. Average kids won't get it. So she expressed concern that anime studios, especially in the global markets, they adopt the similar self-censorship. The 2020 Ghost in the Shell, SAC 2045. SAC. Standing alone. I hate this when I draw a blank. Let me see. I have it. I wrote it down so I would not forget. Let's see. Ghost in the Shell director. Where's that in my notes? Ghost in the Shell. I must have. Sometimes I remove some of the notes, the condense them, because they're just fragments, and I build off the standalone complex, you know, SAC, standalone complex. So they had a 20, it's like standalone complex 95, 98, 2002. That's how the pattern I've noticed that they named this. So this one's standalone complex 2045, and it's titled SAC underscore 2045. I just finished watching that the other day. You know, it's just pure irony. Then I saw this interview. So he talked about them toning down the complex themes, the themes of government control specifically. You know, what I didn't like about that is it made America the bad guy, American Empire. I got news for you, Japan. Before we kick your ass in World War II, y'all were one of the most imperialistic countries the world had ever seen. So I find it ironic in that storyline. And that's Hollywood. That's the world. America's a bad guy. Of course, our $17 trillion economy in terms of what we're worth to the outside world, they love that. And bypassing tariffs and using loopholes. But they keep all our products out of their country. But that's a completely other topic that I cover in depth. Check it out, my Fired Up podcast. So anyway, Oshii argued political correctness risks homogenizing storytelling, reducing the diversity of perspectives in anime and film, making everything cookie cutter in essence. So his comments do align with some of the broader debates about creative freedom versus cultural sensitivity in global media. To me, there is no debate. They've made a debate. You have your creative freedom there for a reason. That's how we move forward as a civilization. So Mamoru Oshii's critiques of political correctness, it highlights tensions between creative freedom and DEI. And we are fighting back. That's why he's able to talk about it. 5-6 years ago, he wouldn't have been able to do this interview. So his remarks are there to challenge you creators to resist the restrictive pressure. I watch a lot of movies from overseas now because I'm just tired of the American crab. I'm tired of a 90-pound woman dripping wet, beating up a 300-pound superhero black belt martial artist, grabbing him by, I mean, I guess there's a game on Max where it's clearly shown. And some judo guy comes, or, you know, that's how it works and all that, you know, when they know, look, okay, so that 0.01% woman can do that. Not this one here who's never been trained and is fleeing zombies, please. Moving on. Blue Origin's all-female space mission mocked by Wendy's Katie, mocked by everyone, Katy Perry, Gail Stewart, I guess her name, Gail Perry. No, Katy Perry and Gail King are those that are being mocked. So about a week and a half ago, Blue Origin, it looks like a big penis going up. It's just irony. Jeff Bezos, he's such an insecure guy. Oh, my rocket looks like a big penis, man, BYC. Just all-female space mission. And they're shocked at the backlash. We're astronauts. How dare you? We're astronauts. So Blue Origin was founded by Jeff Bezos. He announced his all-female crew. And they were in the New Shepard rocket flight. You know, the Shepard did the first, the path they followed was Glenn Shepard's. And they were aiming to break the record for most women in space at once. Woo-hoo! Gail King, Susan Wojcicki, YouTube CEO, former. Carly Kloss, Lauren Sanchez, Sharon Hagel, Lane Best, promoted as gender equality as a gender equality milestone. So I got to show you this. So once again, Gail King, Susan Wojcicki, Carly Kloss, Lauren Sanchez, Sharon Hagel, and Lane Bess. And they were promoted as gender equality milestone. So this was Lauren Sanchez before she went up and after she went up, after she came back down. Say, <"Whoa!" laughs> Yes, I am mocking her. Why? Women, ladies, you don't have to do this. That was a beautiful woman, Lauren Sanchez. Look at her now. I mean, it's just gross. What is it with y'all thinking that we mean like that? No. No, we don't. I mean, you don't have to do that, ladies. Don't do it. Anyway, so the account was, they were mocked. You know, one account sat there and said, quote, our all-female fry cook shift been breaking records since 69. Trivializing the mission's height. You know, Katy Perry, she was smart. She promoted a tour. The problem is Katy Perry's not a teeny bop idol anymore. She's a full-grown middle-aged woman, and her tour is struggling to sell out because her kids have aged out. They're moms now. Hey, you want to go see Katy Perry? I got to take care of my kids. I got dinner. I got to put them in bed. I got to get prepared. Yeah. That's the problem she's facing now. And then Gail King. This is what's funny. Gail King, a crew member, said, quote, I still have a hard time calling myself an astronaut, unquote. That drew the most ridicule. I mean, I even got into the act. So, for example, I microwave leftovers. I'm a gourmet chef. I hit shuffle on my playlist. I'm a professional DJ. I fix my Wi-Fi by restarting the router. I'm an IT specialist. I parallel parked on my first try. I'm a stunt driver. I gave advice to a friend. I'm a licensed therapist. I lifted a heavy bag of groceries. I'm ready for Mr. Olympia. I put my IKEA desk together. I'm an architect. I had to sprint to catch the bus because I can't afford California's gas mileage tax. I didn't realize I'm an Olympic sprinter. I won a board game of Risk. I'm not only a military tactician, I'm a grandmaster strategist. Oh, and the best one, I folded my laundry right away. I'm a productivity guru. Just look it up. Blue Origin. What's it called again? Blue Origin, and you'll see all the kinds of memes, pictures. It's just hilarious. And I say this because they should be mocked. You know, Glenn Shepard, all these astronauts, they were life and death. They didn't have today's technology. They had to work a lot of the stuff themselves. These women were there for a ride, people doing everything for them. I don't care that this mission prioritized wealthy, connected women. That doesn't bother me. He who has the money has the power in. You know, I can't afford this, but at the end of the day, God bless her for that. But y'all are not astronauts. You are overpaid, rich women who went up in space in a big dildo. That's what you did. And I don't care about the diverse backgrounds of the women. There was no Latino man or a black man, and you weren't diverse enough. So the social media mockery of Blue Origin's all-female mission, it does underscore the skepticism about the motives that are at hand here. Some people actually think it's a conspiracy theory. The way that door kind of flapped open so easy, like, how the hell did that last up there in space? And how clean it was. There was no grime or dirt or fire or heat or anything. But then that makes sense. Somebody explained that to me. William, they didn't actually pierce the atmosphere. All right, let's move on. Rainn Wilson accuses left-leaning media a bias in Trump and Biden coverage. So on his Soul Boom podcast, Rain, he was in a debate with MSNBC host Stephanie Ruhle, expressing strong disagreement on her perspective of the dynamics between Trump and the media. In essence, she was just lying. You know, she was saying the media this, media that, Trump this, Trump that, yada, yada, yada. She wasn't saying there, she wasn't looking in the mirror saying, yeah, we media have not done our job. And I guess Rain had enough of it. He goes, quote, this is where I would push back. when I see this kind of insight and passion being directed at the current administration and the lack of this kind of insight and passion being directed at the previous administration, we're again highlighting unequal scrutiny of Biden versus Trump. So in essence, he's saying that what he's saying is, y'all didn't treat Biden differently. He should have, he's a leftist himself. He should have gone back and said, y'all didn't treat Obama this way neither. And he's not somebody who says something negative about Obama. You're a racist. So he accused left-wing media, CNN, MSNBC, of negligence during Biden's presidency. He goes, I'm talking about left-leaning news media organizations were kind of la, 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 everything's fine. That's what he did. La, 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 la. And he's absolutely right. This is what he said on immigration, that he's tired. Quote, tired, unquote. Mess, unquote. Tired. Any one word, what the hell? Quote, immigration is not that much of a problem, unquote. He's saying that to the media, was claiming, and he's right. He called them Cleopatra, queen of denial. And he's absolutely right. He says most people that have issues with immigration aren't racist. Now, he says he's politically independent. I don't know. I don't care. I just appreciate the fact that he pushed back here. His sharp critique of the left-leaning media, especially on immigration and political coverage, well, people can say it's challenging journalistic impartiality. What it shows me is these middle of the road to these actual Democrats are starting to go, whoa, stop, enough of this nonsense. And this made big news, as it should have. Let's move on from celebrities to television and streaming. So 60 Minutes producer quits amid bias scandal. So Bill Owens, executive producer of 60 Minutes, he resigned last week in tears. Yeah, look, they're facing a $20 billion lawsuit, and rightfully so. It's a weak lawsuit, but Trump's getting the PR he needs out of it to showcase how biased leftist swine are. So decades of skewered reporting have come out of 60 Minutes that was once, at one time, no longer seen as a bastion of news reporting. They condemn James O'Keefe for what he does, undercover video, yet 60 Minutes made it what it is. So Bill Owens, 37-year CBS veteran and 60 Minutes head since 2019, announced his exit in a memo. And the Daily Mail said that he cried. That was his resignation meeting. Anderson Cooper was president. Bro, I mean, come on. I'm gay. I don't even wail like that. Anderson Cooper, it was a display described as shocking. So what are the reasons for resignation? I'm being pressured from Paramount Global Chair Sherry Redstone and David Ellison, the potential owner. They want accountability for our screw-ups. If you didn't understand me, Paramount Global Chair Sherry Redstone and the potential buyer of CBS, or Paramount rather, David Ellison's like, y'all suck. Y'all getting us in trouble. Y'all be lying. Y'all not be stating what's factual. You're going to be under the gun with somebody overseeing you. And that's what he did not like. Right now, there's a $20 billion lawsuit from Donald Trump accusing 60 Minutes of election interference. And they did interfere. But it's such a weak case, it's probably not going to go anywhere. But Trump has the FEC on his side here. Or no, I'm sorry, the FTC on his side here. And they're the ones who can make or break the sales. And CBS knows that. So, since the 2000s, let me give some examples. Let me bring you some receipts, baby. Since the 2000s, 60 Minutes has churned out puff pieces for left-wing figures. And they vilify conservative movements. That's a betrayal of their journalistic duty. 2008 segment, lionize Barack Obama. Hey, baby. How you doing, Barack? I hear you bet for the other team. Steve Croft, I'm available. Wink, wink. No, I'm being sarcastic, satire. But that's pretty much how the puff beef went. Mr. President, you must have it tough wiping your butt as president. I know you're struggling with it. That was a pop piece. In 2010, coverage smeared the Tea Party as extremists. We weren't. We just wanted fiscalness brought to Washington. They did not talk about Soros' funded MoveOn.org. They did not talk about the rape, thefts, and muggings in Occupy Wall Street. In 2018, the report glorified Al Gore's climate crusade. They ignored all his big profits from it, all his predictions that didn't come true. They demonized the civil rights group, the NRA. Yes, they are a civil rights group by law. That's how they began. They helped get guns to blacks, which they still do. They said they are Second Amendment obstructionists. Why? Because they want me to have a gun. So Dementia Joe doesn't come up to try to take it and do me like he did Corn Pop. In 2020, they gave Black Lives Matter a free pass, ignoring everything about its leadership or sourcing funding or the mansions or the unaccounted for money. And they branded QAnon as conservatives, which I don't know they are or aren't. And they ignored Antifa's radicalism. In 2024, obviously, they edited Kamala Harris' interview. Made her appear more coherent. Well, Bob, as an intellectual versus... original response. Obviously, I'm exaggerating it, but that was the difference. You saw this slow, dim-witted woman struggling to answer. She did answer it. It was just slow and dim-witted. It just made her look the fool versus the one they showed her. You know, Bob, this is what I think we should do. You're like, damn, I got slow for that woman. That's what they were trying to get you to do. This show's reputation mirrors 2004 and Dan Rather scandal. When he forged, that's right, Danny Boy, you forged documents to fuel a hit piece against George W. Bush's National Guard service. And they circled the wagons, found guilty, fired, dumped like the trash he is. They gave him a journalistic award because the media had to come together. So, right, it's SEC. I said I went from FEC to FTC. It's SEC. I apologize. It's the FCC has a probe over the Harris interview. And that's what's threatening the merger. It's a legit probe, too. And good riddance to Owens. You know, he followed Nora O'Donnell from CBS who left. Ruth Marcus, Washington Post. Jim Acosta, CNN. They're all fleeing because they don't have the numbers. They don't have the ratings. And they don't want to pay them these big fat paychecks. With Owens, it's like you're creating a potential negation of a big fat sale. 60 Minutes touts creative freedom, but they don't have creative freedom. They have hit pieces towards the side of their ideology that they don't agree with. They have fluff pieces. I mean, 60 Minutes and Owens belong on a porn set. I mean, they are the world's biggest fluffers in terms of how they treat the Democrat Party. It's a clear misuse of the public airways to push to set the narratives. And that's what has given life to Trump's cause to revoke CBS's broadcast license. It's just talk. But people are like, not a bad idea. Owens' tearful resignation. His tearful resignation that exposes 60 Minutes' failure to uphold impartiality. And that's what they were known for. As lawsuits and public distrust continued to mount. The show's legacy of bias is what they are now known for, and their relevance as a once bastion of how news should be is disappearing. Let's stick with CBS. CBS pays up in SEAL Team DEI lawsuit. I'm talking about the show, SEAL Team. CBS settled. I wasn't sure if I thought about this. I figured if I did, I apologize. So CBS settled a lawsuit from SEAL Team script coordinator Brian Benneker. He was denied a writing job due to discriminatory DEI policies that were promoting women and minorities ahead of him. One because of gender, one because of color. You're a white man. You keep writing because we're using your stuff. What about their stuff? Not so much. Well, can I get a promotion? No, you're not black or Latino or a woman. So they settled out of court because it was a loser case for them in court. So it proves Hollywood's diversity mandates sideline qualified straight white men that are probably being overlooked because they're prioritizing race and gender over merit. I just want the most qualified person, people. This is not a white, black, Latino thing. It's about qualifications. It just so happens the left has turned it into a white, black issue. He sued and won. He charged CBS with an, quote, illegal policy of race and sex balancing, unquote. And that, he said, blocked him, Beneker, from a staff writer role on SEAL Team despite his qualifications. A joint stipulation for dismissal with prejudice confirmed a settlement with terms undisclosed. We did nothing wrong here. Get the hell out of here, Beneker. I'm moving as fast as I can, trying to carry all this money I was just given. So Hollywood's kind of pushing back now on the DEI because they don't need to have it. You guys don't remember, I don't need that wasn't a lie, but a lot of companies that are in existence today were pro-Nazi companies because they didn't want to die or have their company taken over by Hitler. This is what a lot of these companies do. Oh, hell, Biden's going to shut us down. As we know, when the FBI, DOJ, they went after Facebook if they didn't do certain things in the Biden administration, and Facebook did. And we still have not seen any charges that should be brought up against these people who forced that. This all started, or the tide started turning. It started turning earlier, but this was a big moment. It was the Supreme Court's 2023 ruling against race-based university admissions that exposed DEI as racist. America First Legal took him to court, said y'all are not allowing uber-qualified, overqualified Asians in, and you're allowing underqualified, unqualified blacks and Latinos in. So, this was settled out of court again because Paramount Global is looking for the Trump administration to approve its Skydance Media merger. See, the kicker here is Trump can keep this lawsuit going for the next 8 years. Next 4 years, and if the economy's good, we'll have another Republican. And they don't want that to happen. But regardless, this settlement validates charges that DEI policies foster racism and discrimination amongst gender, punishing talent for being qualified but overlooked, and somebody unqualified taking a job. So is this a reckoning for Hollywood? For some companies it is, and they are going to change. Not all, but some. Malcolm in the Middle has a revival coming. It pushes non-binary agenda. So Disney Plus just is not learning. Malcolm in the Middle, the revival, introduces a non-binary character, doubling down on the studio's progressive push, despite a string of box office flops. From Snow White to Buzz Lightyear, or Lightyear, Disney's fixation on DEI and woke themes, it keeps alienating their audience, people. And this time it's risking the sitcom's legacy. Not that it had a great legacy. So this is a Disney Plus limited series, 4 episodes, Frankie Muniz, Malcolm, Jane, Cash, Marek, Lois, big time leftist, and Bryan Cranston, how they're returning. And Cranston, boy, he's loved him in Breaking Bad, but he is the guy has no clue. He is so far leftist. He's up the leftist tush that he stinks from 5 miles away. And the original writer, the creators, part of it too. So Frank Muniz confirmed at a 90s con in Daytona that one of his kids is going to be non-binary. But he talked about how the irreverent humor is going to handle the character properly. Unless they mock it, you're not handling it awkward. The reason I bring this up, people, is indoctrination. It's important for you to understand indoctrination. Back in 2012, only about 3.5% of Americans identified as LGBTQ. By 2022, that number had risen to 7.2%. It's because of the indoctrination in the public schools, in movies, and shows. They're forcing this. Now 20% of Gen Z adults identify as LGBTQ. China has surpassed us in many ways, and they're going to continue to surpass us. When we put feelings, I don't care about anything but your feelings. What's that, math? It's feelings. How do you feel today, son? Do you feel like taking that math course? No, mama. AP math is too hard. Okay, bud. Okay. Here's some blocks. How many blocks is this? 1, 2. I mean, that's what they reduced it to. Oh, you can take that advanced placement course on LGBTQ. So 4 scripts are complete. castings, the finalizing the castings, probably being done now. So the thing is Malcolm in the Middle was never a big juggernaut. You know, 22.4 million with its pilot back in the day, that was phenomenal. But it averaged 13 to 15 above average. But it was like a top 20 show on average. You know, season one, 8.9 million, 14% audience share. 2002-2003, it dropped. By season six, it was around 5 million. And eventually got canceled after season seven. So it ran its course. Over seven seasons, it did gain a cult following. Yeah, I mean, it was Malcolm in the Middle, Frankie Muniz. I mean, everybody loved him. But it was alongside The Simpsons, the powerhouse. But then it struggled with later time slots. So I think this movie's going to die. Parents, don't let your kids watch this crap. Look, Disney's prioritizing DEI. We saw that with the flop called Snow White. It earned, it's going to be nearly a $200 million write-off. It's a feminist take on Snow White and not traditional dwarves. And it repelled the fans. There were theaters, just over 4,000 theaters, most of them empty, one or two people in there. This is the first time they did it with Little Mermaid. Look, here to Black America and para mi Latinos, when you start throwing cultural appropriation, when you start playing the tribalism game, most white Americans, they don't care when it's a good story, it's about moving and advancing this, but when it's shoving crap down our throats, when it's lying, when it's saying we have a whites have a gene that makes you racist, when it has all that, when you sit there and make the Little Mermaid a redheaded black girl or a white girl black, yeah, they're not going to show up. They're not going to show up. It made $570 million. Yeah, it had to make $750 million break even. Even when you do a good one that does make a lot of money, Mufasa, The Lion King, $722 million. It needed about $625 million to break even. So it made its money, but it paled compared to The Lion King's $1.7 billion. And the problem here was it was preachy. Immigration, inequality themes. That turned families off. Star Wars The Acolyte. Ass after one season. Low viewership. Why? Had nothing to do with diverse characters. It was shoving that diversity down our throats. And you will accept this. You will want to be this. If not, you're not diverse. You're a bigot or racist. It was heavy hand on social issues. Undocumented immigrants. So, I mean, Malcolm in the Middle, it was very sharp. The humor was relatable. And it was untainted by today's cultural mandates. The revival's woke pivot, it's mirroring Disney's broader strategy that is miserably failing. So adding a non-binary character, meaning non-binary, for those of you not aware, means they don't know who or what their sex is. I had to go research this crap. They don't claim to be male or female. Well, you're born a man or woman, according to the UK Supreme Court. But anyway, this risks pushing Malcolm in the Middle into Disney's cycle of woke failures because it's alienating local fans. Let's move on to the gaming industry. Let's talk about Sweet Baby Inc. exposed for pressuring developers in a leaked clip. Sweet Baby Inc. is this company where you go to the company and, this is how you sit there and include and make yourself very diverse. It's a grift. It's a blackmail grift like the Sharpton and Jacksons of the 70s used to do. So they are supposedly a narrative consulting firm, Sweet Baby Inc. And they're facing accusations, not the evidence is in that video, of pressuring video game developers to alter the character identities. And that came about with proof through a leaked internal discussion clip. And they're going to go out of business because of this. This is the leverage companies who may have felt threatened or blackmailed can now use to go screw off. Black Myth Wukong, they try to blackmail Black Myth Wukong. My sources say it was like 6 million. Black Myth Wukong, whatever Chinese is for bleep off, told them to bleep off. 20 million sales in 1 month. Sweet Baby Inc. They've just left a swath of failed games, whether Star Wars Outlaws or the whole genre that they push in. Dragon's Age, The Veil Guard. I can't even remember. Concord. All failures because DEI crap, woke crap, cultural appropriation crap, all of it. So in this internal discussion, this leaked clip, it was exposed by a YouTuber, and I've seen his tweets at plain text. I follow him, Master of the TDS, and Writing Raven of Gothic Therapy. They show the narrative designer Cameron Wilde describing how a studio was pressured to change character identity. And it shows how Sweet Baby Inc.'s consulting involves calculated emotional and ideological pressure. See, I don't fall for that stuff. I'm like, oh, bete carajo. Maybe because I'm Latino. But I'm like, no, ese, I'm not playing that game. And, of course, Cameron Wilde identifies as non-binary. She's a duck with a C. Their goal was, Cameron Wilde, quote, burning the games industry to the ground, unquote. They didn't state who the studio or game involved, but I guarantee you there's going to be a lawsuit against Sweet Baby Inc. now. They work with Ubisoft, Square Enix, Warner Brothers Games, Xbox Game Studios. They've been criticized for promoting DEI and ESG, environment, social governance, climate crap, philosophies with examples like race swapping characters in God of War. Luckily, Sony realized, okay, enough of this crap. They canceled the contract with Sweet Baby Inc., allegedly. Wings Interactive, a Sweet Baby Inc. connected indie fund, deleted its online presence after the expose. There's a former Sweet Baby Inc. employee, Kazuma Hashimoto! Kazuma Hashimoto! Ah! I wonder if he's had anything to do with Assassin's Creed Shadows. People, my brothers, half Japanese, so go jump in the lake. How dare you? William, how dare you? Your own rules, I can. So, he says that developers are reluctant to hire him. You think? Somebody will. See, here's my problem with the woke. I will never hire you if you're woke. Why? Next thing you know, you're going to be demanding certain hours. You're going to be complaining. You're going to be making up lies. And it'll be a chore to fire you. And I will fire you. My take is simple. And I've done this with my previous company. I document it. I don't give you a warning. I give you one warning. That's it. Next time, documentation one. Documentation two. Documentation three. I have never lost EDD phone call. Hey, yeah, they're trying to claim unemployment. We see this. Oh, yeah, that's right. Take my ass to court. I follow the law. He said that people, quote, people will literally be like, hey, are we going to get harassed for hiring you, unquote. I don't believe that. I think he just doesn't get hired. What was the matter with my resume? Well, and the problem is, his resume is probably no different than 20 zillion others in the gaming industry. Kim Belair stated on the Black Girl Gamers YouTube channel that criticism, quote, doesn't materially affect our work, unquote. Well, this video will. Sweet Baby Inc. removed Square Enix from his client list. Square Enix called him up, take us off your damn list. Because it's affecting their game sales. Let me tell you this, people, about the gaming industry. We know how to boycott. We know how to boycott. And yes, we do boycott. And they are feeling the pain. Y'all may not understand this, but it costs for a AAA game, which is what would be a Hollywood big tent movie. It costs more to create that game than it does the Hollywood tent movie. So they can't afford these failures. And these failures, it's like Assassin's Creed Shadows. It's like the movie Mustafa. It's going to make money, but it's not going to make money at the level they need it to. Sweet Baby Inc.'s alleged developer pressure. The leaked clip has amplified concerns about their methods and their impact on gaming development. They are a very polarizing group who is now probably on their way out, as they should be. Let's keep going with the woke gaming. Bethesda's Oblivion remaster sparks controversy over gender-neutral body types. Heads up alert, we are going to have a short next week on Oblivion. We do shorts. We got a new guy, and we're kind of easing them in. And hey, do a little quick review here of how the remaster looks. So that'll be coming. So Bethesda's remastered The Elder Scrolls IV Oblivion, which was released just a week ago, obviously has ignited controversy if I'm talking about it, because they've replaced traditional male and female gender options with body type 1 and body type 2. Yeah, that's going to hurt sales. Plus, people, the problem with remakes is controls are different, things are different, certain tweaks are made. People are accustomed to their old way of playing, and if they're happy, they're not going to leave the game unless it blows them out the water. Instead, they've gotten backlash from fans and a swift response from the modding community. So Nexus Mod's handling of a mod restoring traditional gender options also came under scrutiny. There was a mod that said, no, you can have male or female. And they whacked that mod. So on the remaster, updated graphics, but there are changes made to the character creator. The traditional male and female gender options were removed. And they make body type 1, body type 2 to make it vague as stand-ins for sex-based selections. They don't want to offend the trans community. No in-game explanations, but we all know why. Fans on social media were frustrated. They want their original. They want it as it was with the upgrades and remastering. They don't want gameplay actually changed. Somebody sat there and said, type 1, type 2 is the deal breaker. I'm just fed up with anything alphabet at this point and have zero tolerance for this type of content. And somebody else said, if you don't intentionally include, you will unintentionally exclude. They were framing the change as a DEI mandate. No, that's not true. That's absolutely not true. That's what you've been indoctrinated to believe. And they've done this before. Elder Scrolls Online, they introduced 2023, a high elf companion who uses plural pronouns and is voiced by a drag performer. So the modding community created a mod that restored the male and female options. Uploaded, within 2 hours it was removed. They saw the backlash they got, so they lied and said, well, I don't know if they lied, but they said that, hey, no, we just didn't like the guy who created his attitude. Quickly went up. They said it was initially removed due to the uploader's behavior for expressing an intent inside drama. Really? That's the pot calling the kettle black. And they linked to an inflammatory external website. Well, that's the website. It's not the modding community where it's at. I get your point, but that's a real stretch. So they did re-upload the mod, though. And that's good. Pressure was put on Nexus mods. Why? Because modding's a community can be built up elsewhere quickly, and they know that. So once you have a good reputation, you have a hold on a community, they're going to keep going to you for modding because they trust you. You break that trust, they're gone. So let's see, another user on X criticized Nexus Mod's owner, Dark One, calling him a petty little tyrant. So, I mean, the point is there's ways to do things. So CI Games, they have a game, Lords of the Fallen, and they came out with a poll and said, do you want, what type of body type labels? Well, they wanted male, female, and that's what they went with. So Bethesda's alteration of Oblivion's character creator and Nexus Mod's handling of the modding response show attention in the gaming community. Attention that our side is winning, as we saw with Nexus Mods re-uploading that. And I tell you, but as a Microsoft, your sales will struggle, will not be as impactful as they could have been. Y'all are just not learning. Let's move on to Ubisoft. They faced backlash over alleged data collection practices. So Ubisoft, in a nutshell, has been gathering your private information. There are reports of alleged data collection practices targeting European users. It claims the company is gathering sensitive user information without consent, clear consent, raising privacy concerns, including some of the information's personal details and behavioral patterns, including posts on X where users share screenshots purportedly showing Ubisoft's data collection interface as their proof of this is happening. It included gameplay habits, purchase history, device information. Now, this does raise big concerns about the General Data Protection Regulation, and that's part of the European Union, and Ubisoft is not following those rules. And the kicker is Ubisoft's privacy policy states data is used for personalized gaming experiences and targeted advertising. But critics argue the scope exceeds that. Obviously, there's outrage over this. Ubisoft is spiraling down the toilet, and this is not going to help. They have not come out with an official statement. They did have a 2022 data breach, so that makes this even more concernful. A tech analyst, Emma Voss, she argued that Ubisoft's practices may violate GDPR's transparency requirements. possibly be fined. She goes on to say that companies like Ubisoft must clearly disclose what data is collected and allow easy opt-outs. And that's not the case. See, that's the problem with some of these companies. They don't give you an easy opt-out. So the allegations against Ubisoft, it highlights not only a growing concern in privacy, in not just the gaming industry, but every industry, it demands retribution. And that's the problem here. And if the European Commission can exact money out of a company like Ubisoft, they will. Let's move on to movies. Kevin Spacey's Hollywood comeback sparks outrage and cringe over the industry's hypocrisy. So Kevin Spacey, once a celebrated actor, is clawing his way back into Hollywood. He has two new films coming out despite a trail of disturbing sexual misconduct. He was acquitted in 2022 in a New York civil trial and 2023 London criminal trials due to insufficient evidence. He says, she said. The problem is there are so many of them saying he says, she said. So what does his return do? Well, it exposes Hollywood's willingness to embrace controversial figures. He's known, obviously, for American Beauty and House of Cards. But realize this, over 30 men, including former House of Cards crew and Old Vic Theater staff, have accused Spacey of misconduct, ranging from groping, hey, you been working out? To attempted assault, come here! Ah! And some alleging incidents involving teenagers. Look, he's a bad dude. And I've been told this is not out of the norm for that industry in Hollywood. He was cleared of 12 sexual assault charges, though, in the London criminal trial that involved four men, with the jury citing weak evidence and questionable complaint credibility. And they were unable to meet the threshold of beyond a reasonable doubt. Now, despite these legal wins, Spacey was exiled from Hollywood in 2017. Wow. Whew, 8 years, dropped from House of Cards, replaced by Christopher Plummer, all of the money in the world, it was a CGI replacement, and shunned by all the major studios. Now, his comeback is called The Contract, a thriller directed by Roland Hoffe and Peter 5-8. Is a dark comedy directed by Michael Zyko Hall. They're both low-budget indies, so he's using these as a potential stepping stone. I don't even care what the movies are about. The point is Spacey here. So his return has obviously ignited backlash. I guess I'll tell you. So The Contract cast Spacey as a hitman facing a moral crisis. Peter 5-8 features Spacey as a manipulative cult leader. Rebecca De Mornay's in that. She really never did anything after Risky Business with Tom Cruise way back in the day. So obviously his returns ignited a backlash. Why does Hollywood welcome back these people? Look, I'll tell you why. This is a low indie film. And because of that, they were able to secure a big name like Spacey. It was a win-win for both sides. And they're going to use this as a way to spin it to come see this film. That's what this is about. Hollywood's moral bankruptcy exposed by Spacey's comeback. Again, it's a win-win. They say, hey, we'll use this negative as a positive, try to get people to check out the movie. But it underscores the industry quick to forgive its own while punishing outsiders. And this double standard fuels distrust in Hollywood's self-proclaimed moral authority. Let's go to Kelly Marie Tran's The Wedding Banquet. Flops as Hollywood pushes identity over profit. So we'll do this one here real quick. Kelly Marie Tran, because you never heard of her, but she was once hailed for her role as Rose Tico in Star Wars. She stirred controversy. If I remember correctly, she's like the Asian, you know, cute in an ugly way. Meaning, because you related to her. We're average people. We're like, yeah, go, Rosie. But I guess she hates the fans. And she started bagging on Star Wars fans at the time of the release of The Wedding Banquet and it tanked. They've alienated the very audience needed to salvage it. She played the Resistance mechanic. Yeah, that is who I thought. Rose Tico in Star Wars Episode 8, The Last Jedi, 2017. I guess it sparked heated fan debate. I kind of enjoyed her. I thought it was a cute little side role, kind of like a side quest in the game. Little side story. So I don't know why they would sit there and criticize her, but they did, I guess. And then she had a brief appearance in Rise of Skywalker 2019, and it did little to squelch the backlash. And she attributed it to race and gender bias. Of course she went to the race card. That's what they do. Meaning they bigoted leftist minorities who want a W in the argument, debate, tribalism column. Was it? I don't know. I would sit there and say odds are it wasn't. But she kept talking about that during the promotional tour of the wedding banquet. She labeled the fan criticism as persecution, echoing Star Wars co-creator John Boyega. They're attacking the fans. They don't want to attack the studios, which is where their real issue is, because if they attack the studio, they're never going to work again. So they attack the fans, because the studio's okay with that. Smart strategy, but obviously, the more you use it, the less it works. She needed them, and it failed. This clash with fans, to make them the scapegoat, it just does nothing but deepen the divide. And she needs them. She needs them. It failed to gross $1 million. The film's marketing centered on LGBTQ. That's why it failed. We're tired of that nonsense. We're not going to have it shut down our throats, and we're not going to pay to go see it. And there's not as many of you out there as you think that are willing to support you. You may be seen as a beacon of diversity, but people who actually have to pay to see the movie don't care. So you're looking at estimated 1.5 to 3 million on a modest budget. You add marketing costs to that, and you're looking at anywhere from 2 to 4 million. Or two to 3.5 million. You combine, let's take this out a little bit because we don't know. You speculate a worst, best case scenario, anywhere from 1.7 to 3.5 million. So the film's less than $1 million gross guarantees a staggering loss. And for indie productions, that's bad. Ex-post mocked the film as queer and super woke. They slammed Tran and Boyega for blaming fans instead of the studios. Hollywood's embrace of divisive narratives, like the wedding banquet, ignores the public's desire for universal storytelling. That's true. So this should be a wake-up call for a Hollywood indie industry. The wedding banquet's box office disaster, you fuel that with a niche pandering, meaning a small audience that can go to trans fan attacks, and it proves Hollywood's identity obsession is a losing bet now. You got to prioritize profit before politics if you want to stay in business and regain the audience you trust. All right, now let's talk Pedro Pascal. Marvel's Fantastic Four first step trailer sparks backlash over the female Silver Surfer. Again, I'm not sure if I talked about this months ago, but Marvel's Fantastic Four first step set for release this July gave its trailer. It showed the female Silver Surfer, cultural appropriation. It introduced Julia Garner as Shelah Baal, a real character in the comics, but she was not the Silver Surfer. They made her the Silver Surfer. They mocked the CGI, which looked terrible. The CGI in the first Silver Surfer back in the Fantastic Four earlier at the turn of the century was pretty good. This one looks more like a video game. Looks like an aluminum paddleboarder. And then somebody said it looks like it reminds them of a PS3 dev kit. And obviously the gender swap did not go over well. Norrin Rad is a Silver Surfer. She had a brief role in 1999-2000 Earth X comic series. That's what they're using to justify it. Oh, look, it was in the comics. It was brief. It was just a woke, you know, bit of wokeness there. But she's not Silver Surfer. It became a meme. There's mixed fan resentment. Some reject all the gender swaps as I do, while others tolerate the comic accurate versions. Well, because the technicality is, well, she was in the comics. Yes, but that's not who the Silver Surfer is. In the mainstream comics world. Poor reception, poor CGI. It's not looking well. That's on top of the character changes. Sue Storm, she was pregnant in the comics. And Franklin Richards is going to become a powerful Marvel character. And they're probably going to use this to push the Marvel Universe forward. But look, fans and sources critique Sue Storm's portrayal as a feminazi. Because of what the actress has said. Johnny Storm, they've taken away his lady-like killer vibe into just a boring character, bland character. Toned down, no flirtatious persona. Pedro Pascal, who I talked about, he up on his knees for transgender, everything transgender. He's going to bring that into the role, we suspect. So Marvel's prioritization is just having to go woke. They just don't want to get it. Flop after flop after flop. They're alienating core fans. The character changes in Fantastic Four First Steps, but it sparked fears of another Marvel Comics universe disaster. The last Captain America didn't make back its money. The Marvels. They were a big time tank. What's good? I guess Galactus is getting good reviews in terms of how he was featured. The introduction of Franklin Richards. But Disney needs this work. It's a pivotal movement. This is the first of their next phase. The Marvels grossed under 200 against a $276 million budget. So here's the problem. This last Marvel phase, they all tanked all the movies. They try to sit there and say oversaturation, it's tired. No, it's all woke. It's woke. This is a break or make moment for Marvel. Fantastic Four, First Steps balances the ambitious storytelling with a risky creative choice in terms of how they're portraying the characters and the female version of the Silver Surfer. It's a critical test. It's going to fail. Sydney Sweeney, the hot Sydney Sweeney, not hot in how she looks, hot in demand. She's going to be in two video game adaptions. Well, one is a manga with the anime with the video game, Outrunning Gundam Projects. So Sydney Sweeney, obviously a big-time rising star. She's already a star. She's attached to two high-profile projects. I'm bringing it up because they're old school. Outrun, Michael Bay is directing it, and there's a Mobile Gundam adaption, which is one of the biggest Japanese franchises ever. She's in talks to star in the live-action adaptation of Sega's Outrun video game. Sega's Outrun game was first released in 1986, my era. It's an arcade racing title. That's why you've never heard of it. Players drive a Ferrari to Sarosa through scenic routes, choosing paths that force to reach typical multiple endings, often with a female passenger as a companion. So they're probably going to team her up, you know, kind of like Twister was teamed up, not her, but a different girl. With her Glenn, whatever his name is, this generation's hot male. And it'll be some kind of adventure type game. Again, it's directed by Michael Bay. Transformers. Con Air, probably his biggest one. So look for this. And the reason I bring it up, it's an 80s arcade game. You never heard of it. That was the golden age of gaming, the arcade. You went to a putt-putt golf. Or an arcade itself, and they were just jam-packed. These companies racked up the quarters, hundreds of millions racked up yearly, billions. So her role's not specified, but she's probably more than apt to play the female passenger. Michael Bay doesn't play the nonsense of wokeness. So her hot status in Hollywood, again, is evident. And it's not just Outrun. It's also her role in the Gundam franchise. She's going to star in a live-action Gundam film. So the Gundam Project highlights her ability to secure some big roles here. So Gundam was created in 1979. It's a massive sci-fi franchise. All these robot movies and shows, Transformers, all that is based off of Gundam. Gundam got it going in 79. Giant mech piloted, human piloted mechs. It spans anime, films, manga, video games, merchandising. $20 billion. It's like a billion-dollar year enterprise. So the franchise's core is Mobile Suit Gundam, and it follows conflicts in the future where space colonies battle Earth. And there's some major characters in there. Amuro Ray is a working class. He represents the people trying to fight for the freedom. Its primary timeline is called the Universal Century Timeline. And the reason I say that is there's many timelines that have spun off from the Universal Century Timeline, but that's what I hope the movie's about. And the most popular character is Charles Aznavour, blonde-haired guy with a helmet. He was patterned after the Red Baron of German World War I infamy. He's become the most popular character. So the primary timeline started with Mobile Suit Gundam. And it chronicles the one-year war and beyond. And Char Aznavour, the Red Comet, the Red Baron, see the analogy? It drives conflicts with two factors. Amuro Ray and Sayla Mas, There are also two key characters. She's probably going to play Salamas, which is Char's sister. And Amuro Ray is the Federation's Gundam pilot. He goes from reluctant hero in Mobile Suit Gundam to a new type legend. And he fights with Char a lot. And while Sayla Mass is Char's sister, and they're probably going to make her more adventurous than she has been portrayed in the original. So it's a collaboration between Legendary Entertainment, which is ironic, that's Chinese, and Gundam Mobile, the Japanese born and bred creation from Bandai Namco. It's been in development since 2018. So look for that. It's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to that. And kudos to Sweeney. She takes a lot of flack. You know, of course she's not as hot as people make her out to be, but she's a beautiful woman. We live in an era where we love to knock people down. I'm more realistic. Yeah, okay, pretty women like her are dime a dozen, but she's got the it factor for some reason. I don't know, but I've enjoyed her in movies. There you have it. That is today's episode. It was a heavy episode. A lot of topics I talked about. I mean, a lot of topics. And I hope you enjoyed it. This is a new format. We're going to be talking celebrities, movies, television and streaming, gaming. And it wasn't in there this week, but we're going to talk the paranormal as well. I'm going to be working in our newest this talent discovery, Hody Johns. Great guy, knows his gaming, introducing them on the gaming front. Look for gaming panels that start happening in about a month or two from now. So we've got big plans for the Red, White, and Rude. And I'm not going to be helming this forever. I'm looking for that good team. If you're interested, drop us an email. And I hope you enjoyed today's show. Do not forget, let me do my due diligence here. Bookmark grumblingsmedia.com, grumblingsmedia.com. You can also find us on YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify, ePandora, under the handle Grumblings Media. As you know, Andrew Breitbart said, politics is downstream of culture. And as you saw today, that's where my show goes. I bring you the topic, the dilemma, why it's happening, and what we need to do to counter it. We must fight, as Donald Trump said when they tried to take him out. Thank you for watching again, my friends. I am William Del Pilar for the Red, White, and Rude. And until next week, keep your heads on a swivel.